Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is another Bob and Richard show where we answer questions sent in by our readers. Some were sent to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Richard posted a request for this on both the Gambling with an Edge website as well as on his Twitter and Facebook page. First question. What hourly rate is acceptable for long-term casino play with little or no heat? And my answer to this is it depends on what your alternatives are. If you're somebody who's best outside the casino job returns $15 an hour, then if you can earn $20 an hour in the casino, that's acceptable. If you have a $20 or $200 an hour career, then you need a lot more out of a casino to make it financially sensible. Also, keep in mind, it's not all dollars and cents. Do you have a family, at least somebody special? Spending no time at home chasing a $20 an hour opportunity might not be healthy for your relationship. Do you have anything to add, Richard?
Yeah, I would just say it also depends a lot on, do you like the game that you have to play for whatever it is that you're willing to play it for? In the old days, I played some slot machines where, literally the old days, where you had to feed coins into the machine and pull a handle. And believe me, I would have to make three or four times what I would need to make on, say, a blackjack game with a, you know, a fun dealer and, you know, friends on the game to go back and play some game like that again. So how fun is the game has a lot to do with it. Because some, you know, there are some games that are just awful to have to sit there and grind away at. So, hey, you know, it's going to be a personal decision for everybody, and it's going to be different amounts of money depending on where the game is and who the game you're playing, who you're playing with, if anybody, and there are a lot of factors that would go into it.
Yeah, and how hungry you are. I remember I used to before I lived in Vegas, I was in the L.A. area, Los Angeles, and would fly to Vegas on a weekend or a week to play blackjack with various promotions in casinos, Riviera, Gambler's Spree, and several others. And, you know, if I got there, the airport 45 minutes early, I would go around picking up luggage carts that people had left and putting them back into the holder for 25 cents. And so I might get 10 or 15 or 20 of those while I was waiting for my silly plane. But at that time, money was important to me, and I was basically scrounging. And I would not do that today, but I did then. So, good. Let's move on. Have you ever let a personal dislike for a casino corporation or owner factor into your decisions of where to play? Perhaps when you had comparable AP options, a bad experience for you or for your friends, or politics of the owner, or something else would have made it sweeter to take their money compared to somebody else's. You want to try this one first, Richard?
Yeah. I certainly was affected when two guys I knew were beaten within an inch of their life at the Horseshoe downtown, and I tended to stay out of there for some time. Now, again, this is back, you know, 30 years ago, and things have changed. I, you know, had another friend who was, they threatened to pull his eye out with a pliers at the Imperial Palace. Although the Imperial Palace, I actually really liked beating because the owner back then was a Nazi and, you know, had a Hitler memorial room with a lot of Nazi memorabilia in it. So I did take extra pleasure beating that particular casino. But the only one that I remember staying away from because of was the Horseshoe back when the Binions still had it. But yeah, sometimes I did take extra pleasure in beating places that were for one reason or another.
Yeah, I basically haven't. The revenge factor hasn't an issue, except I guess maybe at the Frontier on the Strip. Back in the 90s, they had a really long-running strike with the culinary workers, and it got really, 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 really ugly. But they also had a very nice single net game and dollar full-pay deuces and a bunch of other really juicy opportunities. So if you pass the picket line, there was really good opportunities inside. And so I'm not sure if I kept going back there because I didn't like the way they were treating the culinary workers, or it was really such a good deal inside. One of the factors is if you really don't like a place and go in there, there will be somebody in there who will learn to know who you are, and they're going to work somewhere else recently. So I basically only go into places that are comfortable to play in, however I define that. And so forcing myself to go play into ugly conditions is not something I do, because there's always risk in going in and playing anyway. And so why take those risks when it's an ugly condition?
You know, the other thing is, for some reason, something subconscious, we tend to like to play certain places better than others. I don't know, you know, what the factors are, but some places I just feel more comfortable or more at home at. And so if you had two games that were equal, I would tend to play more at the place that I feel more comfortable at. But I don't know how to quantify that.
Yeah, and actually, on that level, I agree, but sometimes it works in reverse. In video poker, at least in Vegas, the casinos are more actively removing players one way or another than they used to. And so sometimes getting lucky at a casino or being ahead is the reason for you to like it. If I'm ahead at a casino recently, as much as I want to go back and take another load, I force myself to stay away for several months. So to try to extend my welcome as much as I can.
Yeah.
Another question. He says, my question is particularly relevant to full-time APs. In certain jurisdictions, casinos are required by anti-money laundering laws to ask about your source of funds or source of wealth and demand documentation as evidence of your answer, for example, a payslip, a letter showing a sale of property, tax return, etc. If you answer you're an advantage player, they'll probably see you pass the anti-laundering test, but it wouldn't be good for you EV-wise. Have you ever encountered this situation, and how have you answered, or would you answer?
So for well, me, I'm not, skeptical.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I haven't been asked to provide such documentation, but I'm in my 70s, although I only look like I'm 68. So, but saying that I'm retired is easily believable. So I can accurately tell them it's been more than a decade since I earned a regular paycheck, and they're not going to ask me to provide documentation for that. So I had a number of professions way back when, and I'll just pick one, and sometimes not even a real one. A real one would be, oh, yeah, I was a dance teacher. Well, a lot of people have heard that Bob Dancer used to be a dance teacher, so that's the one that would not scare them whatsoever, but I would not use that. So just pick a profession, and I suspect it'll be fine for me, although most of the audience is younger than I am. Richard.
Well, I'm skeptical of this. When you fill out a cash transaction report, there is something on there where you're supposed to ask the person, what is the source of your funds? And I've certainly been asked this at banks where, you know, I have had cash transaction reports done. I have never heard of anyone asking for documentation. And if they're doing this at a casino, I think they're trying to screw with you, because I've never heard of it being required that you show any documentation. Now, if you showed up at a casino with $100,000 and wanted to put it on deposit, maybe I can see them, you know, asking about a documentation. But even then, I would just say, who carries around documentation? I mean, again, I think there's something else going on if they actually want documentation. Now, if it's just a simple cash transaction report, say you're coming to stay at the casino and you're putting front money on deposit or whatever, and it's over $10,000, yeah, I would just say, this is cash from the last time I was gambling. You know, I'm a big player. I have a lot of cash. So, yeah, that's, I mean, this doesn't happen to me out in casinos because I tend to never buy in for over $10,000 or cash out for over $10,000. If it's cashing out, then it's easy to say where the money came from. It came from the tables, right? But, yeah, I've just never heard of such a thing. And so that's how I would handle it. If it was, when it happened in a bank, I just told them I gamble and I won the money gambling, and I live in Las Vegas and they accepted that just fine.
Yeah. But a casino might not want to accept that. Good. New question. A player had an incident recently in a casino in the middle of nowhere, he says. He's a table game player. There was another card counter who would come up to his table, and every time the player sending in the email to us moved tables, the other guy did too, and he stalked them all night long. The emailer basically glared at him and said otherwise ignored him. He wants to know how we would have handled it. Richard, surely this must have happened to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this happens. And I would be as rude as I possibly could to people like that. I would say, I like to play alone. You know, in the beginning, I'd be nice. I'd say, hey, I like to play alone. Would you mind playing at another table? And if the guy was going to be a dick about it and say no, and he would jump in anyway, well, then I would play only the positive counts and sit out the negatives, you know, and let him play into the negatives. I would do things like when the count went positive, I would spread to as many hands as they would let me spread. And then sit out the negatives. And I mean, basically, I would make the game so bad for him that he would not want to play with me. You know, if he persisted, I would probably at some point move tables. And if he came and did it again, then I would, you know, I would just make the game as bad as I possibly could for him. So, and usually they get the message and they leave you alone.
This kind of thing happens to me in video poker as well, although my response is typically quite different. Since I teach classes and have done so for decades, I'm sort of a public person in Las Vegas, There are a number of players who see me and figure that this game is good enough for Bob Dancer, it's good enough for me. The fact is, though, unless they know why I'm playing somewhere, frequently they're making bad decisions. Sometimes the reasons to play come from the machine. Sometimes they come from somewhere else. Either you're an invited guest at a particular promotion and somebody who wasn't an invited guest would not be getting the same benefits. Sometimes I'm playing to maintain a monthly mailer or a tier level. And if they're not doing that, it could be a negative game for them. So when somebody comes up to me and they say, "Hi, Bob," and they know who I am, there's a whole lot of these people who they know who I am and I don't know who they are. And for the initial few minutes, I tend to be polite. I will shake their hand, ask their name, where they're from, and give them a couple minutes. Then I will tell them, I'm working and I have to concentrate when I'm working, so please don't ask any questions. And if they're a select group of friends, you know, Richard would qualify, but he hasn't really come out playing video poker with me recently. But, you know, a certain group of select friends, I'll tell them why I'm there and why this is a good play or why da-da-da-da-da. But the general public, if I don't know them and there's nothing symbiotic about the relationship of somehow, I'm not going to tell them anything.
Well, the other thing is, if somebody comes up and sits down at the machine next to you because they think it's a good play because you're on it, it doesn't really hurt your play. Whereas on a blackjack table or another table game, it very well could hurt my play. And often if this happens, I'm not there counting cards. I'm doing something else entirely anyway. And but I probably don't want a card counter on my table because it's going to bring heat to the table itself. So that's why I'm trying to get them, you know, off the table. And if I am there counting cards, well, it's going to be very obvious when our bets move up and down at the same time. So, yeah, so not a good thing.
Yeah, and in video poker, if I found a particularly good game, probably there aren't that many games in the casino. Now, I'm not going to be playing a quarter game where there's a lot of them. And so I would rather other good players don't milk the same machine that I found first. But I don't really have a lot of control over that. I can play two machines, but I don't want to give casinos an extra reason to ask me to leave. So fortunately, it doesn't happen all that often. Let's move on. Do you know of anyone who has successfully fought a trespass and had it rescinded? I don't, but I'm guessing, Richard, you have.
Yeah. So, you know, the trespassing someone is a decision that's made by a person. So sometimes you can talk reasonably to a person who actually is in a position of authority that can reverse a decision and get the decision reversed. I had it happen to me one time where I was able to talk to a person high enough up at the casino and say, "Look at my lifetime record," and convince them that, and the reason that I had been 86th actually did not have to do with my play. That was kind of key in my situation. You know, I got 86 because somebody came up and talked to me that should not have done that in a casino when they knew that they had heat on them. And it ended up getting me 86. Now, I was able to get that rescinded. You know, now there are other circumstances, like, for example, Andy Block was able to talk to somebody at Caesars Entertainment and say, look, I'm a poker player. I'm not a blackjack player anymore. I want to be able to play poker. And, you know, they said, okay, that's fine. So there are circumstances where it can be done. It's pretty rare. But the main thing is, it's not going to happen by talking to somebody in security. It's not going to be a shift boss. You have to get to somebody high enough that actually can make that decision and change it.
Yeah, that in my case, I've been trespassed once, and that's at the Laughlin, at the Riverside in Laughlin. I made the mistake of getting 2 four-of-a-kinds in 20 minutes, and so that was sufficient enough to do it. Now, the casino itself is, EV-wise, is not that high on my list, but they... Bonnie and I are square dancers. They actually have a very nice dance floor at the Riverside, and frequently there are square dancing events. So the next time there is one, I plan to make a phone call to Don Laughlin, who is the owner and still an active participant, explain that, you know, I will agree to stay out of the casino, but we're just there to dance and to, you know, pay retail for the hotel rooms. And be, and since he is a dancer, this likely will ring true to him. I don't know that it will. I haven't tried it, but I will when there's a square dancing event that I want.
Yeah.
So the other question is, if you were trespassed, how long would you stay away before? I'm sorry, that wasn't the question. The question is, if you weren't trespassed, specifically, how long would you stay away after being backed off?
For me, it would depend on how well they knew my face. Like, if it was a place that I had been playing a lot that got to know me pretty well, I would stay out at least a year, maybe longer. If it was a place where they didn't know me well, where I hadn't made a lot of plays, then maybe sooner, but... I don't know. Normally, I would say at least a year.
Yeah. In video poker, it's relatively rare that you're actually trespassed, unless you've been caught in some moral failing. You know, at some places, playing on somebody else's card qualifies as a moral failure. In most places, playing on 10 other players' cards definitely qualifies as a moral failure. So, as an example, in late August of this year, relatively recently, I was restricted by the M Resort here in Las Vegas. I could still play, but I would not receive mailers. I would not get any point multipliers or any food comps. So it was about $1,000 a month hit at the time. The thing is, playing at the M, even without this $1,000 a month, was still a positive play if you picked your spots well. And so I'm not going to tell you exactly what spots are, because there are still a number of players who are doing this, and the casino doesn't really have a clue as to what it is they're doing and why, and putting it on the radio is not a smart plan. So, so I was playing after I got kicked out, on a promotion that I thought was worth it, and was playing 50 play double double bonus for quarters. And I made the mistake of being dealt aces, which on a 50 play double double bonus machine means it's $10,000 off the top and an extra $300 for every kicker you get, where a kicker in that game is a 2 or a 3 or a 4, along with the 4 aces. The average number of kickers in 50 hands is 12.76. I ran salty that day and only got 11 kickers. So it was still 11,300 and, or excuse me, 13,300. And that was still enough of them, reason for them to restrict me further. Currently, the restrictions are severe enough. I have no reason to play there. Were I a progressive chaser, meaning I go in and play a machine when the progressive gets high enough, it's very possible there's still positive plays, even though I'm partially restricted. Chasing progressive is
but
not
you'd
something
get to,
I enjoy.
You'd get to do that
yeah.
once, right? Right, if they maybe they've restricted you twice, and then you go in and you hit a progressive, my guess is they would restrict you a third time even further.
Possibly, but maybe not. It depends on how soon you did it after you were restricted and how big the progressive is. But they're usually going to restrict you if you're not going to get any mailers and you get basically no multipliers. And usually that's sufficient. And if you can still want to play, well, God bless you. So a lot of casinos will put up with it if you want to play under those conditions. But I'm not a progressive chaser. Don't enjoy it. So usually when I get restricted, I just stay away. Periodically, similar to what Richard was talking about, I have talked my way back into a casino after being restricted. My batting average on it isn't too great, but it has happened more than once, although it's certainly less than half the time that I'm able to talk my way back in. All right, we are about halfway through of our questions, and we're going to take a brief commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In November, there is effectively double points almost long in terms of Walmart gift cards. Earn and redeem $25 worth of points, which is $8,334 coin in, and exchange them for a $50 gift card. So it's a limit of 10 cards per person. So that makes it, assuming you consider Walmart cards as good as cash, that means it's a 0.67 slot club all month long for the first $83,000 coin in. On Thanksgiving Day, there's a $32,000 hot seat promotion. Every 3 minutes between 8 a.m. and midnight, one lucky player with card inserted will receive $100 in free play. This doesn't happen very often. The promotion does, but you didn't hit. I have played probably 40 hours at the South Point during one of these promotions where, well, it's the best promotion they had at the moment, and I've gotten $300. Three times I would have been called in 40 hours. So it is not a significant amount of EV, but it is some. Every Monday, Seniors Day, half-price meals and bingo if you use your points, and there's a free senior slot tournament. The new semester free video poker classes will begin on Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. The schedule and details can be found on bobdancer.com. Auto Slash. We want to thank our listeners for responding. There has been enough positive response from our listeners on social media who say they have talked to they heard about Auto Slash on this program that Auto Slash says, yeah, we'll try another few weeks, for which Richard and I are very thankful. Auto Slash is a organization that will track the price of car rentals, and it notifies you. It records your discount basis, whether you're in AARP or Costco or airline travel cards, etc. And now if you pay immediately beforehand, you get a significant discount and you can still cancel 48 hours before the car rental if you need to. On average, users save about 30%. I personally use it. How about you, Richard?
I too use it. I have a few reservations actually coming up in the next few months. And whether you go put in your information and get a reservation at AutoSlash or anywhere else, you can then go back to AutoSlash, put in your reservation in their tracker. This is, for me, the best part of AutoSlash is you put in your reservation in their tracker, and any time the price goes down, you get an email that says, hey, we found a lower price. Here it is. Just click here and takes you to the new price, and you can just keep getting lower and lower whenever they find something that lowers the price. So that's the best part to me, that and the fact that it's free, always free, so it costs you nothing to use it. Both Bob and I use it. We highly recommend autoslash.com.
At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. Our listeners get a free trial of the Gold membership for 1 month. They sign up at videopoker.com/GWAE. So it's for 1 month only, and the beginning of the offer expires at the end of this year. The game of the week is Double Super Times Pay. Double Super Times Pay is a 7-coin-per-line game where you can get multipliers between 2 and 10 approximately once every 15 hands on both the deal and the draw. There is no strategy changes necessary, and it averages about a 0.5% advantage or 0.5% increase. So if you're playing 8-5 bonus poker, normally it's 99.17. The double super times version is 99.67. A lot of that extra money, though, is in the very rare hands. If you get dealt a royal, which happens every 650,000 hands rounded, and you also get a multiplier on that hand, which is 1/15 of those times, then those multipliers are all 20. And so it becomes this huge jackpot very occasionally. And so, especially if you're playing like 10 lines. So you can get real big real fast. So normally, you're not going to get that level of multiplier, and so it's not going to play nearly like it's a half, like it's a 99.67 game. But long term, it is. All right, so we're back to our questions from our listeners. Given that one abandons all anonymity when playing video poker, are there any reasons why one would not take advantage of casino credit? Or am I being naive that the casino would offer such a thing to someone who predominantly seeks out AP situations via the best pay schedules and promotions? It's not so much the credit I'm seeking, but more so the convenience of not carrying large amounts of cash. I have mixed feelings on this. I use casino credit at casinos where they know me. It's for the safety reasons you cite, but also there are times where credit customers get better promotions than non-credit customers. If I'm going to a new place, however, I do not sign up for credit line in advance. I'm never sure if my action is going to be appreciated or not, so I make it so that they don't know that I'm coming until I physically sign up and start playing. So, and then it's going to take them a while to make a decision. It doesn't seem to me to be a good strategy for me to call them up and tell them I'm a very famous and successful player, and do they mind if I come in and clean them out? That just does not make a lot of sense to me. But if your name is relatively unknown to the casinos, perhaps this will make sense, especially if considerable travel is involved to get you there. Do you have any comments on this, Richard?
Well, I would just add that if you play other games, you may want to really think twice about this. If I was just a video poker player and played no table games, then yes, I would probably get casino credit. But realize, once you give the casino your social security number, they have it. And if you're a table games player, that can be a big problem, because even if you go get your name legally changed, which we're going to get to this actually in some questions coming up, you don't get to change your social security number. So changing your name may not be enough if you've already given up your social security number. So it's something to really think about if you're playing things other than video poker.
All right, moving on. A player is trying to make a living as an AP, primarily as a blackjack counter. Some of our guests have told great stories and talked about lots of money, and so he figures that, well, maybe that's why we had him on, and that's at least partially true. If you've been successful, we're more likely to want to talk to you than if you've lost every time you've gone play. So this player says, well, he should assume that he's going to make an average amount, which would be 1 to 3 times earnings per hour per typical bet, meaning that if he's betting $25 a hand, he should average $25 to $75 per hour. Richard?
I'm not sure what the question is. I mean, your win rate is
how much, how much should he expect to make?
Okay, so if you're going to take this seriously, then you should spend the money to buy the Casino Verite software, because I can't answer that question without knowing how many decks are you playing, what's the penetration, how big is your bet spread, how many other people are playing at the tables with you. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into how much you're going to make, assuming that you're competent, you know. So if you're going to take the game seriously, then you need to own that software, because then you could plug it in and say, I'm going to play this many decks, and here's the rules, and here's my bet spread, and, you know, it'll give you a win rate. And it's better to look at a win rate per 100 hands as opposed to per hour, because some games you may be getting 50 hands an hour, and other games you might get 200 hands an hour. So it's better to look at per 100 hands, and then you can extrapolate what the hourly win rate is.
Okay. And since Richard referred to this following question, let's ask it. How does one go about legally getting your name changed? Richard.
It's really quite easy. First of all, people ask me about this a lot. Many, many professional players that I know have gone and had legal name changes. Some of them have done it more than one time. It's a piece of cake. I mean, the last time I did it was in California. I was living in California at the time. And you just go on the internet, and there's a form that you download and you fill it out. And at the time I did it, things may have changed. You had to advertise in a legal journal or any kind of newspaper that you are changing your name. I guess the idea is that if you're trying to get away from debt, somebody might read about it in one of these papers that no one reads. But anyway, you put this ad in there. It has to run for 3 weeks, and then you have a court date. You show up in court. The judge says, why do you want to change your name? I said, for business reasons. He said, okay, next, and that's it. Then they give you a legal court document that says, you know, this person has changed their name. This is their new name. So, yeah, it's there's really nothing to it. Now, one of my longtime partner, a number of years ago, researched this and found that if you get married, apparently you're allowed to change your name to anything you want. It doesn't have to be your spouse's last name. You can just change your name. And men can do it too. It does, not just women. So if you're getting married in the near future and you want to change your name, That'd be the time to do it.
Huh. Now, I've had more than one wife. I could have had lots of these different names. Now you
yes.
tell me, Richard.
Yeah,
hopefully
right,
I'm
right.
done with that. But, oh, well.
Oh, by the way, I should say one other thing. A lot of people I know find it a big hassle when you change your name to, you don't want to actually go and change your name on every bank account, credit card, stock, brokerage company, all of that stuff. So some people just change their name on their credit, on their passport. So now your passport is in a different name than everything else. I don't know anyone who's had a problem with that. In my own case, I went and got a global entry visa, which I highly recommend if, you know, for anybody who travels overseas. By getting it, you also get TSA pre in the United States, which if you fly, you definitely want. And when you get global entry visa, you fill out the paperwork, they do a background check, and then after the background check, you go into an immigration office and they fingerprint you. So when I went in to get my fingerprinting after the background check, they asked for my passport and my driver's license. So I handed my passport and my driver's license. They're in two different names. He goes, how come these are in different names? I said, oh, I had a legal name change and I changed it on my passport, but then I never changed it on my driver's license or bank accounts. He was like, okay, boom. I mean, it was less than 5 minutes, I was in and out. So it was no problem at all.
So it's only a problem if you want to play in a casino and earn a free cruise.
Using your driver's license name. Yeah. Yeah, so this can be a problem, right? Because my if I play in a casino under my passport name and use my Social Security number, I'm probably going to get a letter from the IRS saying, "Hey, this popped up as a different name. You know, is this you?" I've had these letters before, right? They say, you know, we got this tax withholding to Richard Munchkin. Is that you? That's not the name on your tax return. And I would just write them back and say, yeah, that's me. And they would go, okay. So that is an issue if you're a video poker player. But if you're a video poker player, you don't need to change your name. So,
yeah, unless you take up video poker after you've changed your name. So. Which was the strategy that Richard used.
Yeah, yeah. So,
all right. Another question.
These are the minor irritants that we deal with in our business.
Yes. Somebody read Ian Anderson's book that if you flat bet two hands of $1,000 playing only positive counts, you can still win $640 per 100 rounds dealt to you. Since there's no bet spread, it seems like you would last infinitely longer in the casino and would receive all casino comps with impunity. And you could even do it smaller. So if you play two hands of 100 and were happy with $64 per 100 rounds dealt, that seems to be great. What do you think about this? So
well,
you
know, if you, I would say if you tried that in Las Vegas, you might last an hour, but maybe not. And as soon as you get barred in the first place, they're going to flyer you all over town. So now, if you do it for two hands of 100, you might last a little bit longer, especially if you hit and run. But a lot of places have no mid-shoe entry, so you can't use this strategy anymore in a lot of places. And the ones that can, the ones where you can do it, you know, they've seen this movie before. So now using this strategy, you know, in Iowa or something, yeah, it might fly at two hands of 100. I don't know, but in Vegas, it's not going to fly for long.
All right. Another question. When we visit Las Vegas, my wife likes to play slots. Can you recommend a beginner slots book? So reading about beginner slots seems to me to be almost like mutually exclusive. People who want to play slots usually are not looking to play the game intelligently, but rather just have fun without a lot of thought. With that being said, John Robison, spelled R-O-B-I-S-O-N, has been a guest on the show and has written a book called The Slot Expert's Guide to Playing Slots. There are some bets in slots that are not as bad as other bets. Now, I haven't read this particular book, but I've known John for more than 20 years, and he writes well, and he writes accurately. The same listener continues and says, we're from Canada, where they have VLTs, which are video lottery terminals. Are there any differences between slots and VLTs? And if so, can you recommend a beginner VLT book? And I have the same recommendation as I had before. You got any beginner slot books you want to recommend?
There are not any that I know of, but I would just say that I know a lot of our listeners are playing slots now. There's a lot of money being made playing slots, and just kind of a warning to people, the MGM in particular is on the warpath and has been barring a lot of slot players. And a lot of the other MGM properties have also been barring a lot of slot players. So just for you slot players out there, be warned. Those places have not been taking it well.
Okay, but you're not talking about a beginning slot player. You're talking about...
No, I'm talking about advantage slot players.
So. Right. Okay, new question. Someone is going to be playing video poker decks or better at the River in Chicago, and he's found some okay machines on VP Free 2, and he's pretty sure he's located in the casino. The only trouble is he's not sure what the pay schedule is because they're older, and he can't see a sign anywhere on it that says they're 9-6. He wants help. And my response to that is pay schedules are not typically difficult to find. The numbers 9 and 6 are the numbers you get for the full house and flush, respectively. Sometimes you need to go to a help screen to find the numbers, but if it's an old machine, you probably don't. If it's not listed anywhere, that would be really unusual, but still you can find out relatively easy. You get the cycle for a flush and full house are each about 90 hands. So you can play relatively few hands and see how much you get on a full house. If it's 45, well, that part's good. If it's 30 on the flushes, that part is good. If it's not those numbers, then it's not a 9-6 machine. That actually is the very easiest part of video poker, and if you're having trouble with that, possible video poker is too tough for you. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that sounds like someone who's never actually played video poker. I've never seen a video poker game where the pay table wasn't right there in front of you when you deal the cards.
Uh-huh. Same player. He also has a blackjack question. He says he's counting cards at lower stakes, and he saw a $5 table, 3-2, with the blazing 7 progressive. He wants to know what adjustments he should make to play it. And I'm going to send him to the Wizard of Odds. If you Google Wizard of Odds and blazing 7s, there's a page where the wizard, Michael Shackelford, discusses this game. There are two versions of the games and two different pay schedules for each version. So there's 4 variations, which are at least 3 too many to go through here. Now, the odds on the game increase when the progressive rises. For most players, simple algebra should be sufficient to figure out when the bet is positive and when it's not, given the information you can find on the Wizard of Odds site. The payout on the side bet involves dealt cards and doesn't require any special playing skills. Now, more advanced players will decide counts of sevens, perhaps even counts of sevens in all four suits. The player asking this question doesn't seem to be near that level. I'm not sure what Exhibit CAA says about this game. James won't let me have a copy, but for the beginning level, that should be sufficient. You got anything on this, Richard?
No.
All right. A player got flat bet at a large strip casino because he used Martingale. He doubled his bet every time he lost. He went from 25 to 50 to 100 to 200 to 400 to 800. He said he would quit after he lost his $800 bet, but it didn't happen, which isn't that many bets, but he was lucky. He ended up winning $3,000. So, WTF. He certainly wasn't counting cards or even using basic strategy correctly because he wouldn't double or split, and yet the casino flat bet him anyway because he had the nerve to win some of his $800 bets. Any idea?
I love this story. I love this story.
Some casinos will back you off if you win, period, end of story. I guess that's what happened.
You know, the answer is gambling with an edge, answer number 37. Why do casinos do X? It's because they're stupid. I mean, yeah, the people running that casino are morons. And they've alienated a great customer. Here's a guy who plays blackjack and won't double down or split pairs. And you want him to flat bet. It's just moronic. It's unbelievable how stupid casinos can be. And I know people listening to this think, well, that can't be right. Casinos can't be that dumb. But yes, they can. They can.
Finally, we have one more question. A player is planning a trip to Vegas at the end of November, so he has a Las Vegas Advisor coupon book. They used to call it Pocket Book of Values. I think they call it something else now. And so he's going to get a rental car and do his coupon run. That'll include casinos all over greater Las Vegas. He has 200 coin video poker bonuses at Sago's Taverns. Now he searched VP Free 2 for pay tables, but there's nothing listed for Sago's. What he would like us to do is go out to Sago's and find out the pay tables for Jacks or Better, Bonus Poker, and Double Double Bonus. It's not going to be me. I don't even know where the Sago's are. Now, there must be other listeners who have researched this, and possibly they can post it on the gamblingwithanedge.com responses to the show. Now, 100 coin bonus for quads, if that's what it is worth maybe 0.4%. At most taverns, they don't have any games where adding 0.4% makes anything close to a positive play. That might be different at Sago's, but you'll have to find out from somewhere else if that's there. All right, well, Richard, we still have lots of questions left, which is good. So we will do this again. And I thank you, Richard, and I thank all of our listeners for sending in the questions. And go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.